Hey everyone, and welcome to this deep dive, where we're going to be looking at billion-dollar weather disasters in the U.S.
That sounds a little scary.
Well, it is a serious topic, but
okay.
We're going to try and have some fun with it too, right?
Always.
Okay, so we've got some really interesting sources to dig into today.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, first up, we've got a report from NOAA.
Yeah.
You know, N-O-A-A.
Wait, NOAA.
Exactly. About all the crazy weather events that happened in 2023. And then we've got this really thought-provoking analysis from the Washington Post that's going to make us rethink some things about why these disasters are getting so expensive.
Okay. I'm intrigued already.
Me too. So the big question here isn't just, is climate change making things worse? It's also about, are we making things worse for ourselves?
Ooh, okay, I like that angle.
Yeah, like, are the choices we're making about where we live and how we build actually contributing to the problem?
That's a really good question.
It is, and I think you'll be surprised by some of the connections we uncover.
Let's get to it then.
Okay, so first, let's take a look at that NOAA report from 2023. And, well, the picture isn't pretty. $28 billion disasters hit the U.S. last year.
Like 20.
28, that's a new record. Shattering the previous one.
Yeah, that's a lot of disasters.
It is. And we're talking about everything from hurricanes to wildfires to droughts to that horrific firestorm in Hawaii.
Yeah, that was just devastating, especially in Lahaina.
Right. It just wiped out the town and tragically claimed 100 lives.
And we can't forget about the drought and heat wave that messed up the Mississippi River.
Oh, yeah, that was a big one. It really impacted agriculture.
And those are just a few examples.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that behind all these numbers are real people and real communities that are being affected.
Absolutely. 2023 was actually the 8th deadliest year for disasters since 1980.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that bad.
Yeah, at least 492 fatalities were directly or indirectly related to these events.
That's heartbreaking.
It is.
And the thing is, this isn't just a one-off year, you know? This has been going on for a while now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Over the past 7 years, the U.S. has been hit by $137 billion disasters.
Yeah. 137 in just 7 years.
Yeah. And the total damage comes to over $1 trillion.
$1 trillion. That's insane.
It is. And it really makes you wonder what's going on here.
Right. It can't just be bad luck at this point.
Exactly. And that's where that Washington Post article comes in.
Mm.
It makes this really interesting argument about why these disasters are getting so costly. And it might not be what you think.
Oh, okay. So it's not just about climate change then.
Well, climate change is definitely a factor. But the article argues that it's not the whole story. They say this surge in costly disasters might be partly our own fault.
Our fault. How so?
Because of where we're choosing to live and how we're building.
Okay. I'm really curious to hear more about this.
Me too. It's all about this concept they call exposure.
Exposure.
Yeah. Basically, it means that the more people and expensive property we have in harm's way, the more expensive these disasters are going to be.
Hmm. That makes sense. I guess if a hurricane hits an empty beach, it's not going to cause as much damage as if it hits a city full of skyscrapers.
Exactly. It's like the difference between a pebble hitting your windshield and a bowling ball.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah, I get it.
And the article uses Hurricane Milton as a prime example. You know, the one that just tore through Florida.
Oh, yeah, that was a bad one.
It was. And the article points out that the population of the counties hit by hurricane-force winds has more than doubled since 1980.
Wow, so twice as many people in the same area.
Right, and even more striking, the economic activity in those areas has quadrupled.
Quadrupled. So not only are there more people, but they've got more expensive stuff, too.
Exactly. It's like we're building a giant bullseye for these hurricanes.
It kind of sounds like it, yeah.
And it's not just hurricanes, either. The article talks about how this trend of increased exposure is playing out with other types of disasters, too, like wildfires.
Wildfires? How so?
Well, climate change is definitely making things hotter and drier, which increases the risk of wildfires.
Right.
But at the same time, we're seeing this huge increase in the number of homes being built in wildfire-prone areas.
Like right next to forests and stuff?
Yeah. Exactly. It's called the Wildland-Urban Interface.
Wildland-Urban Interface.
Got it. And according to a recent Forest Service report, there was a 47% increase in housing units in these fire-prone areas between 1990 and 2020.
47%? That's a huge jump.
It is. And it's basically like we're setting ourselves up for disaster.
Yeah, it's kind of like we're playing with fire.
Exactly. So it seems like we've got this double whammy going on. Climate change is making these extreme weather events worse. And at the same time, we're making ourselves more vulnerable to them.
That's a scary thought.
It is. But the good news is that if we understand how our choices are contributing to the problem, we can start to make different choices.
Okay, so what are some of those different choices?
Well, that's a great question, and one that we're going to explore as we continue this deep dive.
I'm all ears.
But first, let's go back to those hurricanes for a minute and dig a little deeper into the data, because there's something really interesting here that I think you'll find surprising.
Okay, I'm ready for more hurricane talk.
All right, so researchers have been looking at the cost of hurricane damage over time.
Okay.
And they've been trying to figure out how much of that increase in cost is due to climate change and how much is due to other factors like population growth and increased wealth in coastal areas.
So they're trying to isolate the impact of climate change.
Exactly. And they've done this really cool analysis where they've adjusted hurricane damage costs to account for those other factors.
Oh, wow. So they're taking out the effect of more people and more expensive stuff being in the way.
Right. And you know what they found?
Right.
When you adjust for those factors, the upward trend in hurricane damage actually disappears.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
So are you saying that hurricanes aren't actually causing more damage?
Well, it's more nuanced than that. What the research is showing is that if you take out the fact that we're building more and more in hurricane zones, the storms themselves aren't actually causing more damage than they used to.
Wow, that's a game changer.
It is. It means that it's not just about climate change making storms stronger. It's about us putting more in their path.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Right. And this isn't just true for hurricanes either. We see the same pattern with other disasters like wildfires, floods, even heat waves. The more we expand into areas that are prone to these events, the higher the price tag is going to be.
It's like we're building a house of cards on a fault line.
Exactly. And to really drive this point home, think about the Great Miami Hurricane back in 1926.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that one.
It cost $105 million in damage back then, which was a lot of money in those days.
Right.
But researchers estimate that if that same storm hit Florida today, it would cause a staggering $236 billion in damage.
$236 billion.
Yeah. That's over 2,000 times more expensive.
Wow. That really puts things in perspective.
It does. It shows how much we're setting ourselves up for these massive financial hits by continuing to build in harm's way.
It's like we're playing Russian roulette with Mother Nature.
Exactly. So it's not just about the immediate damage from the hurricane itself. It's about the disruption to businesses,
right,
the cost of evacuations, the long-term economic impacts. It's a ripple effect that goes way beyond the initial event.
Mm. Right. It's the whole domino effect.
And it seems like we're not doing ourselves any favors by continuing to build in these vulnerable areas.
So what can we do about it? Are we just doomed to keep repeating this cycle?
That's the big question, and one that we'll be exploring in more detail as we continue this deep dive.
Okay. I'm eager to hear some solutions.
Me too.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, I think it's important to talk about another key factor that often gets overlooked in these discussions.
Okay. What's that?
Preparedness. Or rather, the lack thereof.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Like being ready for when these disasters actually hit.
Exactly.
Okay, so where do we start with that?
Well, let's rewind the clock back to 1995 and talk about Hurricane Opal.
Okay, Hurricane Opal. That rings a bell. Remind me what happened.
Well, it was a powerful Category 4 hurricane that slammed into Florida and caused a lot of damage.
Right.
But what really drove up the costs was that the evacuation plans were totally outdated.
Oh, no.
Yeah, there was massive traffic. Gridlock people were stranded. Emergency responders couldn't get to those in need. It was a total mess.
So it wasn't just the hurricane itself. It was the lack of planning that made things so much worse.
Exactly. It's a classic example of how a lack of preparedness can lead to catastrophic costs. And unfortunately, it's a recurring theme in many of these billion-dollar disasters.
So we see this with other types of disasters, too.
Absolutely. Hurricanes, wildfires, floods, you name it. The cost of the event itself is often compounded by our failure to prepare.
So it's like a double whammy. The disaster hits, and then we get hit again because we weren't ready for it.
Exactly. And this brings us back to that idea of exposure from the Washington Post article. It's not just about how many people live in a disaster-prone area, it's about how vulnerable those people are. And preparedness plays a huge role in that.
Okay, so it's like we need to be thinking about both the physical exposure and the preparedness exposure.
Right. It's a multi-layered problem.
And I'm guessing climate change is a big part of that too, right?
You guessed it.
Yeah.
We can't forget about the elephant in the room, or maybe I should say the hurricane in the room.
Haha. Right.
So how do all these pieces fit together?
Well, it's not an either situation. Climate change is intensifying many of these extreme weather events, making them more frequent and more severe.
Right.
But our choices about where we live and how we prepare are amplifying the costs.
So it's like a dangerous feedback loop.
Yeah.
Climate change is making things worse, and our choices are making us more vulnerable to those worsening conditions.
Exactly. And this is especially relevant when we talk about hurricanes and coastal communities.
Okay, let's dive into that a bit more.
Sure. So warmer ocean temperatures are like fuel for hurricanes. They make them more intense and can even lead to rapid intensification, which makes them harder to predict and prepare for.
So not only are we building more in hurricane zones, but climate change is making the hurricanes themselves more powerful.
Exactly. It's a recipe for disaster, quite literally.
It is, and it highlights the urgency of addressing both climate change and our own vulnerability.
Right. We need to be tackling this problem from both sides.
Absolutely. So we've got climate change making hurricanes stronger, and we've got people flocking to coastal areas. What's the result of this perfect storm, so to speak?
Well, one of the most significant impacts is the increase in flooding events.
Yeah.
Sea levels are rising due to climate change, which means that storm surge from hurricanes can reach further inland, causing more widespread damage.
Oh, that makes sense. So it's not just the wind and rain from the hurricane, it's the water being pushed onto land that's causing the problem.
Exactly. And this is particularly problematic in places like Florida, which has seen explosive population growth in coastal areas.
Florida's been in the news a lot lately with hurricanes. It seems like they're getting hit more and more frequently.
They are. And while some of that may be due to natural variability, climate change is definitely playing a role. And as more people move to Florida's coastal cities, the potential for catastrophic damage from hurricanes and flooding only increases.
It's like we're building a house of cards right on the edge of the ocean. Sooner or later, it's going to collapse.
That's a powerful image. And it underscores the need for a fundamental shift in how we think about development in these vulnerable areas.
Mm-hmm.
We can't keep doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Right. So what are some of the alternatives? What can we do to break this cycle of building in harm's way and then paying the price when disaster strikes?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's one that we're going to delve into in the next part of our deep dive.
Okay. I'm ready for some solutions.
Yeah.
This conversation has been eye-opening, but also a little bit daunting.
I hear you. But don't worry, there is hope. We're not powerless in the face of these challenges. But first, we need to understand the full scope of the problem and the choices that are driving these billion-dollar disasters. Then we can start to chart a different course.
Sounds like a plan. Let's get to those solutions.
All right, with you.
All right, so we ended on kind of a cliffhanger there.
Yeah.
Talking about all these billion-dollar disasters and how our choices are actually making things worse.
Yeah, it's a tough reality to face.
It is. But yeah. Like you said, there is hope, right?
Absolutely. We're not powerless. We can make a difference.
Okay, so let's talk about solutions. Where do we start? What can we actually do to turn this ship around?
Well, I think the first step is to shift our mindset. We need to move away from this reactive approach to disasters and embrace a more proactive, preventative approach.
Okay, so less cleaning up the mess afterward and more preventing the mess in the first place. Got it. But how do we actually do that?
Well, there are several things we can do, and they work on different levels. Let's start with the individual level. You as an individual can make choices that reduce your own risk.
Okay, I like that. Empowering the individual.
Exactly. So for example, if you're thinking about buying a house, consider the location carefully. Is it in a flood zone, a wildfire prone area? These are things you need to think about.
Right. Location, location, location. Mm-hmm. It's not just about the view anymore.
Exactly. And if you do live in an area that's at risk, there are things you can do to make your home more resilient. Fortify your roof, install storm shutters, create defensible space around your home if you're in a wildfire zone.
So basically, be prepared. Be smart about where you live and how you build.
That's a great way to put it. And even if you're not in the market for a new house, there are still things you can do. Preparedness is key for everyone.
Okay, like what?
Have an emergency plan put together, a disaster kit. Know your evacuation routes. These things might seem small, but they can make a big difference when disaster strikes.
Yeah, it's like having insurance. You hope you never need it, but you're sure glad you have it when you do.
That's a great analogy. And then on a broader level, we need to be advocating for stronger building codes and zoning regulations.
Okay, so like making sure that new construction, especially in high-risk areas, is built to withstand these extreme events.
Exactly. No more building flimsy houses in Hurricane Alley.
Right. We need to be building for the future, not the past.
And this applies to infrastructure as well.
Yeah.
Roads, bridges, power grids, they all need to be designed with resilience in mind.
So it's like future-proofing our communities.
Precisely. And beyond that, we need to be investing in natural defenses.
Natural defenses, like what?
Things like restoring coastal wetlands to buffer against storm surge or managing forests to reduce wildfire risk. Nature can be a powerful ally in this fight.
So it's about working with nature, not against it.
Exactly. And of course, we can't forget about the big picture of climate change.
Right. We can't just ignore that.
We need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and transition to a cleaner, more sustainable energy system.
Because even if we do everything else right, if the planet keeps getting hotter, we're still going to face more extreme weather.
Exactly. It's like trying to bail out a sinking boat without plugging the hole.
Great analogy.
We need to address the root cause of the problem, not just the symptom.
Okay, so it's a multifaceted approach. Individual preparedness, smarter building practices, natural defenses, and tackling climate change. Sounds like a lot of work.
It is, but it's also an opportunity.
Oh.
An opportunity to create more resilient, sustainable communities and to build a better future.
Okay, I like that.
Okay.
Turning the challenge into an opportunity. So to wrap things up, what's the key takeaway you want our listeners to walk away with today?
I think the most important takeaway is this. We have agency. We're not just passive victims of these billion-dollar disasters. Our choices matter. And if we work together, we can create a future where we're not just surviving these events, but thriving in spite of them.
That's a powerful message.
And remember, the information we discussed today is just a starting point. There are so many resources available to help you learn more and take action. Don't be afraid to dig deeper and explore further.
Well said. That's all the time we have for this deep dive. But the conversation doesn't end here. Keep learning, keep asking questions, and most importantly, keep taking action. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay resilient. So we've talked about how climate change and our own choices are contributing to these billion-dollar disasters.
Right, a bit of a doom and gloom picture.
It is a bit heavy, but I'm really eager to hear about some solutions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can we actually do to prevent these disasters, or at least lessen their impact?
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely hope. And I think the most important thing we can do is start thinking differently about these events. You know, shift our mindset.
Okay, so what do you mean by that?
Well, we tend to have this reactive approach to disasters.
Right.
We wait for them to happen and then we scramble to clean up the mess.
Yeah, that's kind of how it's always been.
Right. But we need to be more proactive. Yeah. We need to focus on prevention and mitigation.
Okay, so less cleaning up afterward and more preventing the mess in the first place. I like that.
Mm.
And how do we actually do that?
Well, there are lots of things we can do. And they work on different levels. Let's start with the individual level. You know, you as an individual can make choices that reduce your own risk.
Okay, I like that. Empowering the individual.
Exactly. So, for example, if you're thinking about buying a house, consider the location carefully. Is it in a flood zone? In a wildfire-prone area? These are things you need to factor in.
Right. Location, location, location. It's not just about the view anymore.
Exactly. And even if you already live in a high-risk area, there are things you can do to make your home more resilient.
Like what?
Fortify your roof, install storm shutters, create defensible space around your property if you're in a wildfire zone.
So basically, be smart about how you build and where you build.
Exactly. And it's not just about your house either. You know, preparedness is key for everyone.
Right. Have an emergency plan, put together a disaster kit, know your evacuation routes.
Exactly. These things might seem small, but they can make a huge difference when disaster strikes.
Yeah. It's like that old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Exactly. And then on a broader societal level, we need to be advocating for stronger building codes and zoning regulations, you know, making sure that new construction, especially in high-risk areas, is built to withstand these extreme events.
Right. No more building flimsy houses in Hurricane Alley.
Exactly. We need to be building for the future, not the past. And this applies to infrastructure, too. Roads, bridges, power grids, all of these things need to be designed with resilience in mind.
So it's like future-proofing our communities.
Precisely. And then beyond that, we need to be investing in natural defenses.
Natural defenses. What do you mean by that?
Things like restoring coastal wetlands, which can help buffer against storm surge, or managing forests to reduce wildfire risk. You know, nature can be a powerful ally in this fight.
So it's about working with nature, not against it.
Exactly. And of course, we can't forget about the big picture here, climate change.
Right. We need to address the root cause of the problem, not just the symptoms.
Exactly. We need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and transition to a cleaner, more sustainable energy system.
Because even if we do everything else right, if the planet keeps getting hotter, we're still going to be facing more extreme weather.
Right. It's like trying to bail out a sinking boat without plugging the hole.
Perfect analogy.
So yeah, it's a multifaceted approach: individual preparedness, smarter building practices, natural defenses, and tackling climate change.
Sounds like a lot of work.
It is, but it's also an opportunity.
An opportunity.
Yeah, an opportunity to create more resilient, more sustainable communities and to build a better future for ourselves and for generations to come.
Okay, now that's a message I can get behind. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
I think the most important takeaway is this: we have agency. We're not just passive victims of these disasters. Our choices matter. And if we work together, we can create a future where we're not just surviving these events, but thriving in spite of them.
That's a powerful message, and I think it's a really hopeful one too.
It is. There's a lot we can do. And there are a lot of people out there who are already working on these solutions.
That's good to hear. So to
Yeah.
our listeners out there, don't just sit back and wait for the next disaster to hit. Get informed, get prepared, and get involved. Your actions can make a difference.
Exactly. And remember, the information we talked about today is just a starting point. There are so many resources available to help you learn more and take action. Don't be afraid to dig deeper and explore further.
Well said. That's all the time we have for this deep dive, but the conversation doesn't end here. Keep learning, keep asking questions, and most importantly, keep taking action. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay resilient.